Hi, I'm Dave.
I'm Greg.
I'm Nick.
I'm Mike. Level up.
We're in the big ass van.
We're in the big ass van.
See, I was born in Queens. I grew up mostly in Spring Valley, New York. That would be Rockland County. That would be across the river. I went to school in Syracuse and SUNY Albany. So there's SUNY Purchase, there's Brooklyn, there's Tapes, there's other bands, there's Double Double Whammy. There's a whole pile of stuff.
It's just a fact, or maybe it isn't, but we all need to sleep in the same room every single night.
Wow, who snores?
I snore. Greg. Greg snores. Dave
talks. Dave talks and sings.
I do.
What do you do in your sleep?
I sleep like a baby.
I will say that Mike is solid as a rock. But I lived in an apartment building and I was like 4 or 5 years old, and my snoring would wake up all the neighbors on my floor and the person above us and the person below us.
This was a really thin floored building.
It's real. So I had to get my tonsils out. All of my neighbors pooled their money together to get me a tonsillectomy. That last part isn't true, but I did have to get one.
That was before Pledge Music. Hello, I snore. I need a tonsillectomy. Can you raise money for a tonsillectomy? Because all the entire band sleeps in the same room. I know that there was one major that we know about, but I don't know all the majors at SUNY Purchase. So this is really going to get us where we need to go on music. This is going to be super important. Majors?
Arts management.
Arts management. That it worked really well so far, I see.
History.
My major was called Studio Composition. It was in the Music Conservatory.
Oh, there you go.
Cinema Studies and Literature.
Wow. Yeah, because big theater in Purchase, right? Mm-hmm. Big theater studies. What if you made it to grad school? If it happened, which is this is so storied at this point, over and over again. But let's go deeper.
No, my plan was actually that I was going to go for education and maybe be like a high school teacher.
I would probably go for electrical engineering to be
grad school, a master's in EE.
Or like if there's some way to, I guess audio engineering, building audio electronics is what I do on the side.
And then you get to work in the Radio Shack.
By the time I'm done with grad school, there won't be a Radio Shack.
It's gone. It's gone, I think.
Yeah.
Lots of buzz. But does it feel like a month or does it feel like a year already?
I think it feels like a month. It's been a good month, and we've been playing a lot, and the shows have been really good and positive, and it's been a really positive experience so far.
Yeah, I would say it feels like a month because we had like our release show, which was like a really big thing for us, and it was very anxiety-inducing, and I'm still kind of coming down from that. So it doesn't.
Now this is the one in Bushwick.
Yeah, it's like
the album premiere party.
Yeah, the album premiere at Market Hotel. It was directly across from my apartment.
And being a band and releasing your own stuff, it's a very groovy thing to do. It's like, oh, we do this and we do that. But somewhere where was the sea change where you kind of said, you know, maybe we should start looking for a label? And I'll say this for you. There were three labels. You went for like indie royalty. You're like, okay, Sub Pop, Merge, Matador. The story goes that Nick led you to all the right people, et cetera, et cetera. But did you actually get to talk to the other labels, or did Sub Pop just jump the shark?
Sub Pop was really the only one that was truly interested. The only little brush that we had, and this wasn't even anything at all, but we were very excited that we played in North Carolina in Durham, or Matt, no, in Raleigh, and Matt came to the show. And we were very... He ended up buying our last LP, and we were really excited about that. But that was nothing like at all. It was just him coming to our show.
Well, that's cool that he did.
Yeah.
Right. So, not knowing what you could have had, which is kind of interesting, you know, that you never got to. Do you? I mean, obviously, you're pretty damn happy and lucky that this all happened.
They were all crapshoots. It's like we had the idea that those three would be like these dream come true kind of scenarios. So we never like It's not like we ever thought out, well, what it would have happened if we were like in each and Sub Pop just so happened to reach out to us.
Yeah, we didn't really like send demos around or anything. They just asked for demos and then we gave it to, I don't know. We weren't searching that hard or anything.
We gave them demos. Because we met Nick through friends, and so he was at the show through friends, and so all that kind of happened organically, and then he was like, if you send us something, it will be listened to, and so we made something to send.
Yeah. I don't think that we've had the moment, or we're not going to have the moment, I don't think, of what if we were on another label kind of thing, because our experience with Sub Pop has been the best possible experience we could have ever had. It's been so cool.
Okay, now this is kind of interesting because I'm busy listening to the record today on good speakers and then in the car on decent speakers. Let me get this, because I was trying to kind of, and it's funny because then I did the research after I listened and realized that you made it half on tape in Brooklyn, right? And then the other half was after you signed. I want to now put together the pieces of how this record came together, but there is a lot of different sonic stuff here. So how did that all come to be to turn into this record?
You remember I said we sent them songs? Yeah. We put those together in a cabin in Connecticut that Mike's parents own and graciously let us record at. And so that's what we sent them. And most of it was redone, but some of it we kept.
Really? Wow.
Two of the songs we recorded pretty much in full at the cabin. So they were demos that we then just mixed better for the record.
Wow.
And re-recorded vocals, I think, for one of them.
But a lot of the recording in Brooklyn after we got signed was to tape, was to like a 2-inch Tascam, I think, which was really nice. And then everything else was just on the computer, all the extras.
Yeah, so now when it all comes together and it's sequenced and, you know, way before mastering, producer, where did that come into play? And tell me a little bit, because I know he, if I'm correct, he also, you know him, because in 2013 there was a single that he worked on. Am I correct there?
No, Mike has been a friend. He went to SUNY Purchase with us, and he played in a bunch of bands that we were always playing with, and he has had a hand in everything that we've ever done. And so he's, by being like close friends with us and by having worked with the band on like 3 records now and like multiple 7-inches, he knows what we're going for, and so he kind of like is able to just take what we're trying to explain and just be like, oh yeah, like this is how you want to blow out the tape like this, and then like we're going to push it a little harder in the computer and we're going to use this amp for this sound. And
yeah, and so said label never came to you and said, by the way, you have to hire Sid Shmagaga, the big producer who really is the king of distorted vocals.
Sub Pop was very hands-off in that we were like, okay, this is what we want to do. This is where we want to record. This is who we want to do it with. And they're sort of like, cool, we've never heard of any of those things, but sounds good.
Right. Here's a quote. You wanted to make it sound like you wanted it to sound. How did you know when it sounded like you wanted it to sound? Where's that moment where you all come together and go, that is exactly the distortion we want. That is exactly the weird little sound. Oh, we caught this little hidden discussion, and we want to put this in the front of this because the Beatles did that. You know, I mean, how do you know when each thing sounded like it was supposed to sound?
There's a spectrum of confidence and doubt, and when the doubt goes away, then you all start
actually nodding your heads going, you know, it's actually okay.
Yeah. A little bit. It's never complete. The doubt is never completely gone for me.
A lot of it also came with like, we would get a guitar tone and we were like, or maybe a bass tone. Yeah. That's a better example. We would get a bass tone. And we'd be like, maybe this sounds okay. And then like, we'd go back and forth. And then as soon as we layered like a guitar or something, those like meshed together in the way that we wanted. And that's, you know, so a lot of it was like layering and being like, oh yeah, these sound good together. But by themselves, they sound like kind of bad.
It's tricky stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
We re-recorded a lot of things. Yeah. Oh, like we tracked bass multiple times and like would come back a couple days later and like take out a guitar and do it again or something.
I'm just going to put the microphone in the middle and see who's going to take this one. So I, before coming here, went to hiddendriver.com. And I read, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age. I could have picked anything. Man, that's a heavy site for the, like, to get us to the hit single, isn't it? Who's going to, I mean, because everybody else is, all the kids are listening to them. It's so cool. Hidden Driver. It's like, it's, I know what it's about. And then I went, to the site and I was like, whoa, who's going to take that and tell me about that?
Yeah. Well,
heavy man.
Astrid Taylor's an activist and writer.
Yes, indeed.
I really like that book because, I mean, I don't read a lot, but I liked that book because it was, I don't know, a subject matter that interests me, and also the way she talks about sort of a fairly, like, academic subject is pretty, like, conversational, and she tells a lot of stories in it, and it was an inspiring book, and also just the website name just sort of, like, clicked with me or something like that. I thought it was nice.
But it's a challenging record because people who are looking for one thing are not going to get that one thing in any one track. They kind of have to roll with the fact that, and here we go, that it's about the songs, that it's not about the style, that it's not about the instrumentation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that having the three songwriters has been, like, traditionally a little, like, scary, because you'll be like, okay, like, how are we going to fit this, like, TV theme song and this, like, 8-minute, you know, Lord of the Rings drone track together?
The English Magic Wizards effect.
Yeah, exactly.
And as has been said before.
I think the fact that we've all been doing it together, like, makes it so that even if styles are not necessarily cohesive, like, there is continuity in it just because we've been playing together for so long and know what each other, like, are good at and need. And then having Mike there produce the whole thing, obviously, it's just like a final thread that, like, kind of, like, puts it all together sonically. Yeah, so it is kind of, like, hard in that there are three different songwriters, and that might be, like, a little jarring, but definitely, like, we know what we're doing well enough to make it cohesive.
And then you have to take it all, go on tour, do the record cycle, and play it live, which becomes a lot of work because you've done such loving care to pin the meters, to get the distortion, to do all that. So that becomes a whole another lovely project. Like, how do we get that same distortion? How do we get that same stuff in the 25-30 venues we're going to be playing over the next bunch of months? And you're shaking your head like, nah.
There is definitely a phase of recording the songs and figuring out the arrangements in the studio and doing whatever we want and layering as many tracks as we want. But then we obviously have to learn it for four people. And I think it creates a nice like back and forth between the song on the record and the song that we play live. It ends up being a little bit different. But we have incorporated new elements into the live show to deal with that a little bit more. There's more keyboards now.
It's cool. It's kind of like we're a different band live than we are on the record. And I think people are sometimes surprised, and also, like, they enjoy that, to go see the songs that they know played differently, sometimes, like, drastically differently.
I love it when I see a band and that happens. So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, because if you come to see the record played, some people do, though. Some people do, and they're like, what happened, man? I want to just hear the... And it's like, no, that's why it's called live music. You've been at this a while, but a lot of your audience doesn't know that. So then they read things like, 90s... I'm going to do in the full announcer voice, because I like doing this. You know where I'm going, don't you? 90s loving guitar majestica. Bushwick it band. Crypto pavement throwback. Can I just tell you that moving forward now that you're on a label, now that you've got a record that is going somewhere, now that you're getting the buzz and you're coming against the Bushwick It band and the Crypto Pavement throwback, and they're going to throw genres at you, and 90% of the people like me are going to do this. What's the plan to either fool people all the time or just to say, go ahead, I know what you're going to say, so I'll let you finish my sentence, or just to say.
We just kind of have our, like, when it's interviews like that, or not saying like that Rolling Stone one was like that at all. That was a good interview.
No,
but like a lot of interviews are just like the same kind of questions repeated.
I like rarely am reading something where I'm like, that was really good. That was really good. And like, but I feel like we write genre a little bit, because it's just what we,
it's,
you know, it's
head,
what we like.
Loud.
Yeah.
That is the term that we use, wearing our influences on our sleeve. But definitely it gets a little tiresome when you read.
Sleeves get heavy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like you just like, you always read, oh, for like fans that like Pavement or like Built to Spill or things like this. And it's like, yeah, that's heavily influenced, but it's not
we
like.
I love those bands.
I grew up with those bands and love those bands. But
at least we love those bands, honestly, because I'm in another band called Crying, and we get compared to bands that
don't
make any sense, and it's like such a drag. Yeah, it's such a drag sometimes. So at least we are getting, when I read like band sounds like this, it's usually something that I do like.
I have invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs on the outside and then songs by anybody else in between.